Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. The holidays can be a stressful time. We all know that. As I've grown older, I've really learned to enjoy the holidays more. I really do try and go for moderation so that I'm not exhausted and so that I can just enjoy spending time with my loved ones. Thanksgiving is a truly American holiday. It's come under some fire in recent years, and there are some problematic elements to it. But for most of us, it's a time to gather with our families, to spend time together, to watch some football, and to eat a huge meal. I love Thanksgiving because it's like the warm-up for Christmas. It's the beginning of the holiday season, and frankly, I think the holiday season is what gets a lot of us through the winter months. It's fun to get together with our loved ones, and for many families, it's one of the few times each year when we're all together. But we all know, no matter how hard we try to keep things pleasant, sometimes when you put people together for too long over the holidays, things can go badly. Just how badly? Well, let's just say you might not feel so bad about arguing over politics or religion after you hear the story of this woman. This is the story of murder on Thanksgiving, the story of Omima Nelson and her very unfortunate husband, Bill. Let's get into it. Omima Aree Nelson emigrates to the United States from Egypt. Omima was a beautiful woman and had even modeled in her native country. She was born in Egypt in 1968 and was subjected to female circumcision, something I cannot believe is done. It's absolutely appalling, but it is cultural. It obviously causes a lot of trauma for women, and I think it plays a role in this story. Omima was born in a very impoverished village in southern Egypt near the border of Sudan. Her father was physically, verbally, and sexually abusive to both Omima and her mother. After years of abuse, Omima's mother had had enough, and she left this abusive father and husband. Omima and her mother left with no money, and they fled to the slums of Cairo, a place known as the City of the Dead, because of the terrible living conditions there, and because the shacks that people live in are built on actual tombs. In Cairo, Omima met an American oil worker, and they started a romantic relationship. Well, this was very taboo in Egyptian culture, and so Omima's mother forced her to marry this American man. Her mother also saw the marriage as a way for Omima to escape the crushing poverty that they lived in. When this man's time in Egypt was complete, he took Omima with him and they flew to his home in Texas. As I guess we can expect when people are forced into marriage, it didn't last long because it didn't go very well. Omima was now on her own in a strange country. She spoke little English and had almost no money. She took jobs as a housekeeper or a nanny, and sometimes she stole what she needed to get by. She very quickly got tired of that hardscrabble life, and because she was beautiful, she used her looks. It was not hard for her to get a boyfriend, and she had a series of boyfriends. She would meet a man, quickly move in with him, spend all of his money, and then when he got tired of her and tried to throw her out, she would rob him and run. She even tied one of these boyfriends to a chair and held a shotgun on him while she robbed him and then took off in his car. After a series of failed relationships, Omima found herself in Orange County, California. It was 1991 and she walked into a bar there. There she saw a larger-than-life man. He had a huge belt buckle on, he was wearing red cowboy boots, and he was flashing a huge wad of cash. He was also talking about being a pilot and the large plots of land he owned in various places throughout the country. The man was 56-year-old Bill Nelson, and he was instantly drawn to the pretty 23-year-old Omima. She was instantly drawn to Bill too, but probably for different reasons. They spent the night in the bar talking, and then Bill took Omima home with him in his red convertible Corvette. They spent the night together, but Bill forgot to tell Omima something pretty important. He was married. He got around to telling her a little while later, but Omima didn't care. Just days after they met, like 3 days after, Omima and Bill got married in a quickie wedding ceremony, and they left on a honeymoon road trip to Texas and then to Arkansas to meet Bill's relatives. Now, you can imagine what Bill's relatives thought when he pulled up with a 23-year-old young woman, a girl, that he's known only for a few weeks. They didn't think too highly of the relationship, but they also knew who Bill was. He was a talker, he was a braggart, he had to have the best of everything, and he lived a very flashy lifestyle. Bill's children, well, the whole situation went over like a lead balloon. Omima was actually younger than most of Bill's grown kids, and needless to say, they were more than a little skeptical about the entire relationship. While Bill and Omima were visiting his family on the family ranch, Omima was thrown from a horse, and Bill was actually really impressed when he asked Omima if she wanted to go to the hospital, and she said, "No, just get me some vodka and some aspirin." Bill liked that about Omima. She was tough, and she didn't pull any punches. After their whirlwind romance, quickie wedding, and honeymoon trip, the couple returned to Bill's apartment in Costa Mesa, California, and Omima began to set up house. They'd only known each other for a little over 3 weeks, and the holidays were coming up fast. Omima seemed happy to have a more stable living situation. She bought some furniture, she cooked for Bill, she was making a nice home for him. On Thanksgiving Day, 1991, Bill called his daughter Margaret and told her that Omima was cooking Thanksgiving dinner and asked her if she would like to join them. Well, Margaret declined his invitation and they hung up. She didn't know this would be the last time she would ever speak to her father. Sometime on Thanksgiving Day, things went terribly awry in the apartment. No one but Omima knows what exactly happened. 3 days after Thanksgiving, on December 1st, 1991, a man named Jose Esquivel was at home when he heard knocking on his door. He peeked out of his blinds and he saw a red Corvette in the driveway. He didn't recognize the car, so he didn't answer the door. And then later that afternoon, the red Corvette returned and someone rang his doorbell and knocked again. The knocking turned into pounding, and soon he went to the entryway and threw the door open. There was Omima standing on his porch, crying and covered in cuts. Omima and Jose had been boyfriend and girlfriend some months previous to this, but he hadn't seen her or heard from her in some time. Jose asked Omima what's going on, and she told him that her new husband, Bill, had assaulted her and tried to kill her, and that she was forced to kill him in self-defense. As if this weren't shocking enough, Omima then went on to tell Jose that she had cut up the body of her husband and had been disposing of it for the last several days. She had mixed parts of it in with the Thanksgiving turkey, and she was grinding it up, bit by bit, in the garbage disposal. Neighbors would later say they heard the garbage disposal running for hours on end on Thanksgiving Day and the day after. Omima told Jose that if he would come and help her get rid of the rest of the body parts, she would pay him $75,000 and would give him 2 motorcycles. Jose kind of played this off like it was no big deal and he was going to help. But as soon as Omima left, thinking Jose was coming behind her, he called the police. Police dispatch put a call out over the radio to be on the lookout for a woman with black hair driving a red Corvette. Soon, 2 police officers spotted Omima and pulled her over. When they did, she had this black trash bag in the passenger seat next to her. Omima was removed from the vehicle and the trash bag was opened. It contained organs, including lungs, that had black spots on them from cigarette smoking. Right there on the roadside, Omima began making up stories. She told the police that the body parts belonged to someone that Bill had killed and then he had fled. She said he was on a business trip and couldn't be reached, but that he was forcing her to dispose of the body while he was away. Police immediately got a warrant to search Bill's apartment. These photos here show you what they saw. There were boxes and boxes of computer parts. You can see some of those on the table here. Bill had a side business where he repaired computers and then sold them out of the apartment. But mixed in with the boxes of computer parts were suitcases. And when the suitcases were opened up, they had black trash bags with body parts in them. Upon further investigation, the police found a broken side lamp and an iron, like an electric iron that you would use to press clothes, and it was smashed into several pieces and had human hair and blood on it. Then they went into the bathroom. I cannot describe to you what they found there, but think meat locker. There were hands in a pot, and there were hip bones in with the turkey bones. In the freezer, along with the frozen vegetables, was Bill's head wrapped in foil. Omaima had deep fried it and it was badly burned. The more the police searched, the more they found, and it just got worse and worse as they went. Omaima was now back at police headquarters. She was talking, but her story kept changing. Sometimes she spoke as if Bill were still alive. Then she started saying that voices in her head that sounded like demons told her to kill Bill. She told the police the same thing she told Jose, that Bill had assaulted her and that she had killed him in self-defense. Police told Omaima that they would like to have her physically examined to back up the claims that she had been assaulted. Well, at the hospital, there were no signs of trauma. Omaima claimed that the cuts on her hands and face were defensive wounds, but a wound expert said they were actually done by the blade of a knife slipping through Omaima's hands, and the cuts on her face and her breasts were self-inflicted. The medical examiner was trying to piece together... That was not the right choice of words. Hold on. The medical examiner was trying to put together what happened to Bill. He found he had been bludgeoned to death with the electric iron. His skull had been hit so hard that it was fractured, and the iron actually broke into pieces. Think about that. Think about how hard you would have to hit an iron against something to have it break into several pieces. It's gruesome. Bill had also been castrated. When the medical examiner was finished, his report determined that 100 pounds of Bill was missing. There are a lot of details here that I cannot go into, but you get the picture. Eventually, Omaima copped to what she had done. She made some statements regarding barbecue sauce and ribs and how much she enjoyed them, and I'll just leave it at that. She later recanted her claims of cannibalism, but no one believes her. Omaima Nelson went to trial in December of 1992. The prosecution brought in ex-boyfriend Robert Hansen. This was the ex-boyfriend that Omaima had tied to a chair and robbed at gunpoint. He testified to Omaima's violent nature and told the jury what Omaima had done to him. At trial, it was revealed that the bedposts on Omaima and Bill's four-poster bed were broken. Omaima had tied him to the bed at some point, and he had broken those trying to get away. And then Robert Hansen testified that Omaima would often ask to tie him to the bed. At times, apparently, Omaima would leave him there for hours, even taking his wallet and leaving the house for hours, sometimes overnight. The prosecution then told the jury that its position was Omaima lured her husband Bill into the bedroom and tied him to the bedpost with the promise of sex. When he was tied up, she bludgeoned him to death with the bedside lamp and with the electric iron. The prosecutor told the jury that Omaima demanded money and credit cards from Bill, and when he refused, she had become enraged. Omaima's defense attorney told the jury that Omaima had PTSD from her abusive childhood and the barbaric practice of female circumcision, and I don't doubt that to be true, not even a little bit. But her defense said that Bill had been abusive to Omaima throughout the duration of their month-long relationship, and because of that PTSD, she had snapped. They claimed that days before the murder, Bill had tied Omaima to the bed and held her captive for days, assaulting her and denying her access to food, water, and the bathroom. The defense said it wasn't Bill that was tied to the bed, it was actually Omaima, and she was able to free herself with one arm. And when she did, she reached over and grabbed the bedside lamp and hit Bill over the head with it. They then said she was able to free herself entirely. She went for the iron and bludgeoned Bill only to get away from him, only to save herself. As if this story wasn't strange enough, it gets even stranger. Omaima then began to claim that ancient Egyptian spirits, the voices of her ancestors, came to her and through her and told her to kill her husband. She said after she did that, the spirits told her to dismember him because if he was scattered, that's the word she used, that he would be able to go on to the afterlife. If she didn't dismember him, his spirit wouldn't be able to move on. Come on, Omaima. These kinds of claims in court actually bother me because of women who are actually abused. When women make these kinds of outrageous claims in court and people hear about them, in my opinion, they are less likely to believe women who are actually abused. It makes it more difficult for the general public to believe real, true victims. And I find that to be frustrating. There are very real instances of self-defense murder in situations of domestic violence. And it angers me that women like this water down that very real defense with such ludicrous stories. I don't doubt Omaima had PTSD, and she may have been abused. The Egyptian spirits thing is what got me. In January of 1993, the jury was sent to deliberate, and it was out for 6 days. The prosecution began to worry because, as we know, very often the longer a jury is out, the greater the chance for a mistrial or even an acquittal. When the jury returned, though, they had a verdict. They acquitted Omaima on the charge of first-degree murder, but found her guilty of second-degree murder. They also found her guilty of assault on Robert Hansen, her ex-boyfriend, in a separate case. At her sentencing, Omaima was given 28 years to life in prison, and she was sent to the Chowchilla Women's Facility in California. Interestingly, she has spent her time alongside some very notorious criminals. Omaima is in prison with Susan Atkins. Well, she was until Susan Atkins died in 2009. She's one of Charlie Manson's minions. She serves alongside Helen Golay, who is part of the team of female murderers known as the Black Widow Murderers. And she serves with Nancy Garrido, who participated in the kidnapping of J.C. Dugard. And also, she is in a cell apparently next to Louise Turpin that... Don't even get me started on the lunatic Turpin family. I'll cover that story at some point, but that one just really gets me. It's a pretty serious roster of dangerous females, and Omaima, she belongs right there with them. While Omaima was in prison, she started writing to men on the outside, because of course she did. She started a relationship with a disabled man who was 70 years old at the time. They ended up getting married. Then this man died and left Omaima with all of his money. She sure knows how to pick them, doesn't she? So if Omaima ever gets out, she's pretty much set for life, which is troubling. Omaima first came up for parole in 2006, but she was denied. The parole board found her to be unpredictable and a serious threat to public safety. You think? She came up for parole again in 2011, but was denied because she refused to accept any responsibility for the murder. A big part of being paroled is owning what you do, and Omaima refuses to do that. Even if she killed Bill in self-defense, which I kind of doubt, what she did afterwards was enough for her to have to own up to, right? I just have a really hard time with the self-defense argument when you don't immediately call the police after the act and tell them what happened. When you try to cover things up, you lose me. When you dismember the person and shove them down the garbage disposal mixed in with the Thanksgiving turkey, I'm out. The only thing Omaima has ever said is, "I'm sorry I dismembered him." She also said, "If I didn't defend my life, I would have been dead. I'm sorry it happened, but I'm glad I lived." When she was asked, "What was your purpose in cooking him?" Omaima declined to answer. Omaima then came up with a very strange argument for parole. She said she could prove she wasn't dangerous because she had been allowed conjugal visits with her new husband, the 70-year-old disabled man. And I guess those conjugal visits take place in kind of a little apartment with a kitchen. And she said, "There were knives in the kitchen, and not once did he fear for his safety." I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, but what else do we expect from our gal Omaima at this point? She's out here cutting off wieners and barbecuing ribs. The bar is, it's pretty low. By the way, the apartment building where this all happened is still standing. Unlike the Jeffrey Dahmer story, they didn't demolish it. I do hope they put in a new garbage disposal in the kitchen. So for now, Omaima Nelson sits in prison in California. She comes up for parole again in 4 years. I wonder what she'll be having for Thanksgiving dinner this week. And I wonder if she thinks about Bill every year on that holiday. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Happy Thanksgiving. Please hit the like button and subscribe to my channel. You can even join my Patreon. I sure appreciate you, and I want you to enjoy yourselves. Take care, be kind to each other, and I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.